This is the April 3 edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Logan Kimmel joins us from Naperville. He's at Roach Ag. That's RoachAg.com online. And Mike Zuzlow's at GlobalComResearch.com. in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming, from the opening market report to the closing market report and all things in between, along with information from the crop scientist, the agricultural economist, and the animal scientist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's get a list of items that we should take up for the day. I'll start with Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com. Hi, Mike. I hope things are going well in Atchison. What's on your list for the day?
You know, I guess since we don't have much to talk about, I was wondering if we could maybe talk about the chartreuse rooster tail in your spring fishing tackle box and the best uses for that. No, I guess we'll talk about tariffs. We'll talk about planting. Whatever the other guys want to talk about, we could talk about too.
All right, Logan Kimmel, anything additional on your mind that you've been watching?
A handful of moving parts here the last 24 hours. I think volatility's name of the game here. Something we could discuss is amidst all that, we didn't have all crop markets closed too badly here today. So what opportunities will be out there as we get into planting and the heart of the growing season upon us?
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've covered it, just the tariffs and the reaction today and what we might expect moving forward. And then, you know, what the acreage and quarterly stocks that we got there on Monday, how that might impact the market. You know, will those numbers come to pass, or could we add a few acres here and there, or, you know, what the combination of those acres look like?
There has been so much that happened in the last 24 hours. I had nearly forgotten that we had both the grain stocks and the acreage or prospective plantings report released on Monday. Let's go through it by calendar events. And we'll begin, Mike Zuzlow, with you on the grain stocks figures. Not too many surprises there. What did you think of them?
No, not at all. And I think, you know, given the fact that we do have some weather to talk about in both the United States and still in South America and maybe some other places around the world, Todd, I felt like that the supply side was what we got early in the week from the acreage and stocks report. And you know, having the second lowest wheat acres since 1919 was a real boost fundamentally to the bigger stocks number. And you could see with the corn and beans as well, like on-farm stocks of corn and beans being so much lower than year-ago levels really helped support the idea that, yes, we have big corn acres, but they're not planted yet. And soybeans, obviously, finding the best, I think, in both reports, both stocks and acres. But that was kind of mitigated by the harvest. And so I felt taking a look at everything in its totality when you incorporated the supply side and the weather in these reports, we didn't chase the bull away, and I think that we are still tight enough in supplies that if the demand is there, we can still have weather-led rallies.
Logan Kimmel, would you agree just on the simple supply and demand tables that the reports on Monday made things feel and continue to feel just a bit positive?
I think so. I think for the week, that was actually part of more of the quiet end of things with all the trade coming in right at about the estimates, including the acreage. So still sitting fairly tight here in the corn market. I guess the only surprise, but something to keep an eye on to me was the spring wheat acreage coming in at the very low end of expectations and about 500,000 acres below the average trade guess. So that to me seems pretty low. You throw in a little weather problem here, that spring wheat acreage number seemed to me fairly low.
There are fewer soybeans being to be planted, apparently, Matt Bennett, across the Midwest, in the primary states, the I states, as well as others, North Dakota. Did that surprise you, given the number of acres of corn you were thinking would be put into the ground prior to this report?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by bean acres being down. I mean, essentially, Corn's not going in the ground necessarily this year because it's wildly profitable. It's going in the ground because soybeans are not profitable. And so, you know, we talked to a lot of growers, and these guys I'm sure did, that said, we just can't make $10 beans work on our farm, you know, in certain areas. You know, I know in central Illinois, there's some awfully good yields we've seen here the last few years, and, you know, a lot of 75, 80 bushel beans, and that might work okay with the kind of price action we've seen. But at the same time, you get out of this area where APHs are 10, 15 bushels lower, and it's just pretty tough to call it a profit. And so to me, I thought that the bean acreage number at 83.5 could have even been a little bit lower. It wouldn't surprise me if it was, but by all means, I think that it makes a lot of sense that, you know, you're down 3.6 versus a year ago. And it'll be interesting to see if all those beans get planted, depending on what this spring looks like.
What do you think the supply side of the S&D table will tell us going through the season and looking forward?
You know, I think a couple of things. I suppose you're talking both corn and beans here, but, you know, I think whenever we look at this from a corn standpoint, you know, quarterly stocks tells us that that really strong disappearance of corn is actually going on. Some were a little bit concerned that, you know, maybe you'd get a bearish quarterly stocks number. I don't know that I've ever seen a quarterly stocks average analyst guess come in right at the number. I mean, that's just, that is not a common occurrence. And so that was pretty interesting. But yes, it confirmed really strong demand. You know, you look at soybeans, and it came in basically at the guess as well, which would confirm that we're still going to have plenty of soybeans. So I think moving forward, what I really want to watch is, you know, what's the USDA do with exports? Could they maybe trim a little feed usage? I don't think there's any doubt that they could do that. But seeing the kind of 200 million bushels less than what we saw a year ago at this point definitely would lend credence to 154. You know, may have to come down just a shade. And then on soybeans, I think a lot of it's going to depend upon stuff we're going to talk about moving forward, you know, like with the tariffs and whatnot. Is China going to go ahead and take all the beans that they purchased off of us? Because there's still a fair amount of unshipped sales. So, you know, if they would cancel some of those, especially with crush backing off here lately, as far as how much we've been crushing, crush margins have actually improved this week with the soil prices. But bottom line is, if they would cancel some of these, I'll tell you, it would be a little problematic for the balance sheet.
And Mike Suslow, can you pick up on that as it's related to crush and soybeans, the potential for renewable diesel to pick up and for there to be a lot more demand for soybean oil, but a lot more bean meal around and what needs to be done in the United States or in the export markets in order to handle all of those products and how the soybeans react?
Yeah, that's a good point, because that was another piece of the puzzle this week was the EPA meeting with Big Oil and Big Biofuel and the USDA Ag Secretary talking in Iowa about working hard with EPA on the biofuel policy. And so I think we are moving towards a higher level of sustainable aviation fuel. It goes back to how quickly can we do that? And it's sorely needed. I think that's what your major point is, between the meal being the leader to the downside, the short side of spreads, and the potential, as Matt said, about losing some soybean demand to China, especially with this trade issue. It seems to me, Todd, that when everything's all unpacked, not knowing what China's response is yet, and that's a big one, and we're not near done on knowing what the demand side is, because we still haven't heard from China. I think we're sitting in a situation where we're still looking in our offices. The beans are still the leader to the downside, whether it's the export market. Export sales were horrible for the products this week. You know, the Brazil supplies are coming on. They're not going to be small. Corn may be able to be ticked down and move some metric, you know, several metric tons lower in production. But beans look like they're going to be there. And then this China trade relationship. And then where do you go with the domestic demand to offset the export demand? And I don't think there's a good place there, even though we did hear from the EPA that they're talking about, you know, going from 3.5 billion gallons to upwards of 5.75 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel. It's almost a 70% increase. But again, it's going to take some time to get there, I think.
Do you think, and maybe I can ask all of you, because I don't know who will know the answer to this question, when they're talking about sustainable aviation fuel, do you suppose that there is a differentiation in the definition on the ag side as opposed to the oil side, so that the oil industry is already invested in the soybean processing plants, the renewable diesel, or added on the ability to create renewable diesel, which they could also manage to use at some point for as SAF, or sustainable aviation fuel. And so is oil looking, the question really is, oil looking at soybeans and the plants they have in place, or is corn looking at ethanol and the plants that they have on in place, and how does that play out? Because it can be made from either. Oftentimes it's more likely it's made from an oil base as opposed to an alcohol base. And it just, I'm just thinking that through and wondering what that really means for the marketplace. Anybody have thoughts on this one, or have you read very much about it?
I'll just say real quickly, I met a fellow last winter that was talking about this to me, and you know, he was saying California was the place to go because in his mind it was about 30% of the total amount that the whole U.S. would consume initially, and it was the best place to start, and it was the place that was leading the way. But we saw where that got us, and I think that is, to my earlier point, is how long will it take, and will a state like California not accept biofuel that is soybean-based? I mean, and will Europe then change their regulations and not want any kind of our biofuel because of the trade negotiations? So it seems very cloudy to me, very muddy waters right now as far as being able to replace that lost potential export demand.
Logan Kimmel, this is part of the volatility you suggested. That is the name of the game, including the tariffs that were announced on Wednesday by President Trump. How do producers take advantage of volatility during the planting season?
Well, I think today was a pretty good example here in the last 24 hours. As the announcements were coming out, we saw multiple markets last night trading sharply lower, led by the financials and the energies. Well, that led to a lower open last night in the grain markets, gapping down. And I think it took until the day session to, really see it out, and ended up finding some buyers here in the corn and wheat markets. Is that partly due to Mexico and Canada not being on the reciprocal tariff list? I think so. But I think, you know, in times like that, it shows, having a plan in place and not to get wrapped up in the emotion with the headline news that comes out and moves the markets. I think we're going to continue to see that going forward here. It seems to be the tactic or the approach of the administration using the tariffs for a few things. One is negotiating. Two is a revenue source, and three, protecting national security. So when headline announcements come out and move the markets, the grain markets specifically, it'd be advantageous not to get wrapped up in the emotion, even though it's very easy to, because I think if we zoom out big picture, there are other factors that could be friendly here to our crop prices heading into to planting, including extreme weather, flooding in most of in some parts of the Corn Belt, especially southern parts. So I think there'll be other headline news and opportunities where marketing better prices might come about. And today was a good example of actually having a decent close here on the corn market and the wheat. So keeping the emotion out, having a plan in place as we navigate tariff talks, negotiations, I think that's going to continue here going forward.
I was thinking about the tariffs and wondering, Matt Bennett, about the reciprocals versus the 10%. And I think just for clarification's sake, the reciprocals are not additive to the 10%. When you saw those numbers that were on the placard the president was holding in the Rose Garden, those were the total tariff amounts, including the 10%, to the best of my knowledge. Still, the two are separated, and I'm wondering if the reciprocals or the negotiation, and to Logan's point, the 10%, and Logan didn't quite put it this way, but the 10% are the revenue generation that the president wants to use to make tax cuts going forward, and how that impacts U.S. trade if they simply do not come off.
You've said a lot there, first of all, Todd. I mean, to be honest, I don't know that anybody knows exactly how this is going to work. One thing that was noted today is China came out and basically demanded that we drop the new tariffs that he proposed on them immediately. And they said, but, you know, we'd like to essentially, we're going to talk about it. They also said that that they're a long ways away, you know, and that they're not confident that something's going to be resolved there. But, you know, how he's instituting them, who exactly is getting tariffed what, you know, he said that you're going to basically 10% across the board here. And so in my opinion, I guess we've got a lot to learn here. I mean, to be totally honest, Todd, it's a fluid situation. It's hard to understand, you know, as a producer, like Logan said. I'll tell you what, you don't want to be reactive to this type of news, if you will. You know, you don't want to get scared into making sales whenever you wake up and the market's gapped lower and you're all of a sudden looking at lower prices. You're thinking, what are we going to do if we go down another 50 cents? Yeah, to me, I think you've got to let the dust settle on this, see exactly what all this information means, you know, and then wait and see. Because I also am like Logan in thinking that, you know, there's a lot of things here that could actually be beneficial to us moving forward. I want to look at, you know, what is the big picture situation? What does world supply and demand look like? You know, what's the balance sheet here in the U.S. look like? Because ultimately, you know, if I'm a grain originator, those are the things that are going to be helping me make decisions on how aggressive I want to be moving forward. You run into some weather this summer, and we could have a very dynamic market.
So, Mike Zuzlow, from the macroeconomic side, and I read this off of the USTR's or United States Trade Representative's website related to the reciprocal calculations, that their view was that economic theory as it relates to tariffs has been wrong for the last 50 years, and something else is afoot, and that's why they're using them. I suspect you've been thinking about this for a while. I'm not sure you've been thinking about it in that form, but how do you put this into context of the economic theory we followed after Smoot-Hawley and the experience there, and actually nearly a decade before that, a rise in tariff prices in 1922 legislated as well. So what are your thoughts about these tariffs going forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, your question about macro theory is really the heart and soul of currency policy. When you think about the four major players in President Trump's administration doing his policy, I had seen an article last night that I respect the person that writes it. They do a really good job, grain analyst, and they talked about how it's going to get worse and worse, and we're going to lose more export share in grains because of these tariffs. And I could make a counter argument. I probably will with my clients and subscribers through some research over the next 60 days. I could make a counter argument, I think, that it was precisely the strong dollar policy that allowed globalization to take hold to let us lose all of our factory jobs, but buy a lot of cheap goods that also helped create an environment where not only did we build bigger competitors internationally against us in agriculture, but then they had less buying power to buy our grain and traded with one another. And so my bringing this back to today and what the other guys talked about, Todd, is, as we talked about at the Beef House, President Trump's been very consistent. He said 60% tariffs on the campaign trail with China. They're at 54 now. The real heart and soul of his trade policy, and I say his foreign policy, and I think that's what Logan was saying as well, if I'm not misunderstanding, is this is about the U.S. and China. And I think the administration played it very smartly in keeping USMCA and the North American Trading Pact together, because China would not play ball. In other words, the U.S. wanted a fresh Plaza Accord like we did with Japan to get their currency off the floor and make it go up and the dollar go down. Japan said, yes. I'm guessing what people have started to say in Washington was called a Mar-a-Lago Accord did not happen because China said, no, we're in a better spot than Japan was back in the 80s, and you're not going to stop us at this point. So that's why we got 54% tariffs, and that's why President Trump, would be my bet, is why we went ahead with what we went ahead with yesterday. So what that means is his policy is to weaken the dollar. And that's working. And that's why I think we had such a great price action in corn and wheat compared to all these other commodities out there. We made fresh 2025 lows in the dollar. We're not far from the 24 and 23 lows in the dollar index. So what would wake me up at night and make me want to go hedge immediately, if I had one thing out there, it continues to be that dollar index, because the dollar index going down not only helps our products, but it also keeps interest rates low. And that keeps us out of recession, or better protects us against recession in the United States, and keeps those commodity funds buying risky assets. So that's how I see it right now. But again, China has not said anything. I don't want to get out over my skis, because this is a 50-year-old shift in policy. And that's the whole point of your question about the macro theory.
Yeah. So, Matt Bennett, if this policy were to cause the dollar to inflate or increase in price as people around the world look for a safer haven for currencies, what issue does that create, and how likely do you think that might be?
I don't know how likely I think that it might be at this stage of the game. I mean, clearly we're significantly off the highs we saw, just a couple months ago. So, I mean, you look at this dollar chart and, you know, I mean, you just go back and I believe we topped out right around the middle of January, pushing 110, currently looking at, today, actually, we were looking at 101 and change, got a little bit above or a little bit below it. If you take this thing back up, I would certainly, or even take a new high, it's certainly going to make our products more expensive on the world market. To me, we've got enough playing against us already that it would be super problematic for, you know, for our exports. And so, you know, what do you do with that information? I mean, clearly it's a tough game. For me as a grower, if I'm sitting here looking at this and I'm worried about something like that, there's always something that you can do. You can always put a floor in under this market. But gosh, Todd, most people are putting themselves in a spot right now this early in the marketing year in the growing season to where, you know, if they're locking something in down here, a vast majority of growers are actually going to be in red. So you've got to leave yourself a very flexible type position if that's what your fear is and you're trying to protect against it. So, yeah, I think that, being reactionary to bearish news hasn't been a good plan, in the past, as far as I've been concerned. And so, you know, I think that we have to let cooler heads prevail, and hopefully let them prevail, and maybe turn around and see what happens here moving forward. I give this just a little bit of time.
To be clear, I wasn't suggesting, and I know you know this, but I was not suggesting the dollar would move higher or that it would become a safe haven, but that it seemed to me that it was a possible option. Logan Kimmel, you've been listening to the conversation. You probably understand, I'm sure you do understand, that producers are not very far along on their marketing of their new crop. Is standing aside and waiting for the moment the right thing to do?
Well, I think at this point, with where we're sitting here today on both old and new crop, it might be an area, to hang tight, like Matt said, see where the dust settles. But I think before things get really busy here in the next few weeks, when the rain stops and guys get in the field, this might be a good time now, though, to look at your marketing, sit down, take a run at your P&L and put some orders in and have some targets. So if we see some volatility play into the market, maybe the other direction, and we get some headline news that maybe gets some funds to step back into buying some grains or out of equities into commodities, and we do see a push on some of these new crop prices, if you're busy and you've got orders in at levels above the market that maybe right now don't seem attainable, I think right now that'd be an appropriate thing to sit down and do, because I think it's so early in the game. We even on old crop, I think there's still time where we got to plant the crop. We still got to grow it. So I don't know if the opportunity is right now to be a marketer, but you certainly can have orders in, have a plan in place for the next 2 to 4 months, in my opinion.
The tariffs will go into place, Mike Zuzlo, on Saturday, April 5, and again on Wednesday, April 9. Reaction from the world probably won't come until they have been implemented, I don't think. What will you be watching in those retaliatory tariffs if they come that gives you pause?
That's a really hard one, because you know the energy markets are so important to the soy complex and the corn complex, and that's one of the things that I think we're just short term seeing some longs pull out of the crude oil and the energies because we didn't hit Canada as hard. I think generally speaking, Todd, and I'll get back to your question, Wall Street handled this terribly compared to LaSalle Street as far as expecting tariffs coming in. And in fact, New York copper made a new all-time record high. It was more valuable than gold earlier this week. And it was partly, I think, and almost mainly because they were thinking that we would really not be able to import hardly anything. But metals and energies were excluded in the tariff news. And so I think that gives us some leeway that the reciprocity doesn't have to be as bad. What I would say to you, to answer your question at this early stage, is what I am gaming out right now is more of a geopolitical issue between Iran, Russia, Ukraine, and China doing these massive military drills in Taiwan. Where is the dollar going to become a safe haven again? Is it going to be because of the financial markets? That seems a lot less likely if the Wall Streeters keep selling and the bonds keep going up and we see the bonds as a safe haven. I think the more likely scenario would be the dollar comes in as a safe haven. And so does the reciprocity lead to some kind of move geopolitically is what I'm looking at right now. And I know that's a very vague answer, but that's the best I can do right now.
Let's get a final word now then from each of you. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net. I'll start with you for the day.
Yeah, I think that looking at the start of the week, things looked a heck of a lot better than when we talked on Thursday. Of course, Thursday, we were talking more about tariffs. On Monday, we're talking more about fundamentals. We're talking about world supply, U.S. supply, and acres. And I think that, that's where I want to put my focus moving forward. Certainly, we want to be on our toes and watch the news and make sure that we have a good handle on potential ramifications. But at the same time, again, this early in the year, I want to be pretty patient and kind of hold on for a little bit and see how the dust settles.
Logan Kimmel from Roach Ag, your final word for the day?
Oh, seen a lot of volatility here across the board, financials, energies. One market to keep an eye on for folks out there with cattle, still at some awfully lofty levels here, but if we do see an unwinding of money flow, I would be cautious. If you're a producer in the cattle markets, you could see some pretty sizable moves here after a really, really good run. So cattle prices, in my opinion, are something to watch up here at these levels.
And finally, Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas.
Well, the first two things for me, Todd, is to watch if we can make new lows in the dollar again on Friday, and if that can stimulate maybe breaking above some big resistance lines in the weekly grain charts, because we were up against those earlier this week. And the other thing I'll leave you with is the idea is maybe we've seen the top corn acreage number and the low bean acreage number because of this weather pattern. I know we have bigger machinery than we did back in 2009, but it sure looks like an issue as far as getting that corn in the ground and maybe having to switch some corn acres to beans in the big key valleys that we grow in.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists for the week, including Mike Zuzlo at GlobalComResearch.com. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Logan Kimmel at Roach Ag. That's RoachAg.com online. And Naperville, Illinois. And Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He is in Windsor, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.